Blog Talk Radio.
There is no earthly way of knowing.
Good man is on fire.
Which direction we are going?
Direct the El Camino. It would have been DWI.
Have reached a tipping point.
Good evening and welcome to Tipping Point. The band is back together. I am Stephen Platinum. I'm going to declare myself the Paul Stanley of the group. I'm going to take that hit. And we have the effervescent Miss Rachel and the venerable, the word he likes the most, the venerable Larry Goodman. How are you guys tonight?
Oh, how does one person accumulate so much shit in their lifetime? I just can't, I cannot figure this out for the life of me. I have, the boxes are multiplying like rabbits. This is ridiculous.
Oh, I thought we were going to jump in and talk about Paul Adams, but you're talking about Miss Rachel. For those that don't know, has moved recently. She's moved to the Big O, Orlando, Florida. In fact, in a special, well, not that anybody would care about this, but I'm driving over there as we speak. At the end of Tipping Point, I will get to see the new digs of Miss Rachel. Rachel, how was the move overall?
Well, my cat and dog survived in the car together, which was about the most nerve-wracking thing. But it's just, God, there's a lot of shit in this tiny-ass apartment.
Yes. Larry Goodman, tell us about your weekend in wrestling.
My weekend in wrestling was limited to one show only. I made the drive out to the sleepy town of Temple, Georgia, to take in a UIW show for the first time in, well, the first time in 2015, that's for sure. So that was the sum total. I had some thoughts of making it to AWE on Sunday, but it was just too much for me to get down there. So I went to UIW, and boy, I don't think I'd want to run a show in that town.
Well, how, I mean, from the report, which of course you can read on Georgia Wrestling History, news and notes, the impression I got was that crowd was just as dead as Good Friday. Is that the deadest crowd that you've been in front of in a long time?
It is. I mean, when I saw the AWE show in Temple, and that crowd was dead, but I more chalked it up to that they didn't know AWE,
sure,
the people out there, really, and that, so I didn't think that much of it. But, I mean, this is their home base for UIW. And
yeah.
It just was really, it had to be a disheartening crowd to wrestle in front of them, because it almost didn't matter what anybody did. They just couldn't get a reaction out of these people. So,
what,
which is really
surprisingly
for West Georgia, too. I mean,
I guess there's West Georgia and then there's Temple. And
apparently.
What? You said somebody's entrance got a reasonable reaction, though. I'm trying to remember who that was. Do you remember?
The Japanese guy. The Japanese guy. Hacked. Yeah, they, of course, he has an interesting look, but it really was, you know, striking me of all the people that there was a little bit of a pop for him out of the, you know, relatively undercard people. That they popped him. Now, Stan Robinson, the booker, did tell me that that guy actually wrestled his first match in the United States for UIW. So he may be known a little bit about the UIW fans, but other than that, that was a little surprising. And, they hit in their main event inside the first ever steel rope, no rope steel cage match was a
regular. How was that thing not promoted? I mean, that's a unique, interesting thing to me. And I don't really remember hearing anything about it. I could be wrong about that, but I don't remember that they're making a big deal about that.
No, I don't think you're wrong. I don't think a big deal was made about it, and it didn't really amount to much in terms of I think it would have been a better match as a singles or at most a tag. And with six guys in there, it was just kind of like your sort of mini War Games kind of thing, except it wasn't really War Games or Battle Royal. It didn't really – the ropes not being there didn't distinguish the match, except the trying to climb up the cage, Jimmy the Kid trying to get up the cage to do the dives without the ropes was a little bit – but he managed to do it. Really didn't make much – it really didn't make much difference one way or the other not to have the ropes with the way that came out.
Hmm. So UIW is now working in conjunction in some way, shape, or form with AWE. So
yeah, both bringing in Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano in January, second weekend of January, and you know, doing Saturday night at UIW and Sunday for AWE. And while I think it's outstanding to be able to see those talents here in Georgia, I just can't imagine it means anything to the people in Temple that these guys are coming in there.
Tough times right now for UIW. Wow. Well, for this weekend, which, PCW has what I would call its first really big show since Sacred Ground, November 7th. Lady Tapa could not make it, as it turns out. So my motto is we don't do make goods, we do make greats. So instead of just getting somebody to replace her in the match, I decided to go full bore. Since Rachel and Dementia have never really met in a match, I went ahead and got two people for them. So Sue Young, who is an opponent of Rachel's in the past, at a past Sacred Ground, will be teaming with Dementia against Latasha, who has developed actually a following at PCW to team with Rachel. So that's going to be the main event now of this Saturday. And I'm going to be bringing Rachel into town, so that's going to be exciting. But Larry, I know, they're doing the Jim Cornette Experience at Peach State, which is absolutely awesome. Where are you going to go this weekend?
I think I will be at Peach State specifically for what you stated, because of Jim Cornette coming in there, and I'd hope to do, PCW and then head out there. But I don't want to miss the session with Cornette. They're going to do because they're going to do a live version of his podcast there, and I want to hear all that comes down. I was pretty impressed that Cornette's podcast, they just did their 100th podcast, and they're now very close to 1 million downloads on that damn thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So to say he's got a following is putting it mildly.
It will be interesting to see, certainly rooting for Peach State Wrestling out there. Hope they can draw a good crowd. The West Georgia scene seems really crowded. But, what's the reaction? Because, Larry, you're a mover and a shaker, and everybody wants to talk to you. What's the reaction from UIW about their crowd? Not only the size of the crowd, but just the fact that they're just that dead. Is that perceived as a problem?
Well, they remarked on it, and they weren't happy about it. I didn't really get a good take. Is it always this bad as far as crowd reactions there? But I didn't get the impression that it was way out of the ordinary. Definitely they do better in Buchanan, that the crowd's hotter in Buchanan, and they do better in Buchanan, and I just go to Buchanan if I was them. And maybe there's some reasons they're not doing that, but I would try another town instead of that place. One other thing I did want to mention, as far as the crowd size, they similarly to Shane Knowles at Peach State feel like there's just too many shows running out in West Georgia. I guess there's now like two and possibly three shows running in the Whitesburg area. So Whitesburg's becoming like the Chatsworth of West Georgia or something like that? I mean, good grief.
What an honor. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, one other thing I want to mention, and I think it was last week, we may have talked about, you know, guys that might be going to the next level in Georgia, and I was kind of negative about not seeing those people. And one guy I've forgotten about in that moment that it keeps coming up for me is Drew Adler. This guy's an unappreciated talent because he's got the size, he's got the athletic ability, and he's really developing abilities to connect with crowd both as a baby face and a heel. I'm becoming a big on Drew Adler, very definitely.
Who are I'll just ask this, Larry, and then I got a question for Rachel. For Drew Adler, I'll just be blunt because that's what I do. Who does Drew Adler need to work for so he can get better? I mean, being a great talent in certain leagues doesn't really do a whole lot for you, right? At some point, there has to be a league that you learn from, somebody that you learn from. Where should Drew Adler go to wrestle?
Well, probably outside of Georgia. But within Georgia, I'd like to see him at AWE. But a PWX wouldn't be a bad idea for him. An FIP wouldn't be a bad idea for him. I mean, I think he's certainly got the ability. I'd love to see him get a shot at this. A next step up on the indie scene.
Yeah. So it'll be curious to see what he does. And of course, you know, we're in November. Can you believe we're in November? Rachel, you're gonna be at PCW this Saturday. Now that you know that it's not going to be Tapa and Dementia that you face in a three-way dance, but a tag match instead, what's your mindset going into this, knowing you're going to go against Dementia and Sue Young?
You know, like you said, I have been against Sue Young, but not against Dementia. So it is kind of a wild card there, but I do have the backup, and we've kind of been talking behind the scenes. So we're developing a plan, me having seen Dementia for a long time, pretty much since I was in PCW. I've gotten to see her work and see her change. So I'm kind of piecing that together, and we're kind of hacking down at ways we can really go against Sue. So I think we've got a really strong strategy going in, and, you know, it's really a no-miss. Tapa's not there, that's okay, I'll wait for her. But Dementia stuck her nose in, that's something that I got to take care of.
Oh,
hey.
Yes, Larry, please.
No, Rachel, I just want to, can you fill us in a little bit about your partner, Luscious Latasha?
You know, really all we've been talking about is she's been around Sue, and I don't know a ton about her yet, so definitely.
I actually know a little bit about her, Larry. She's a Florida gal, and she's like strong, and apparently she came into PCW last show kind of unexpected and unannounced, and then Hankins put her on, and she got over fast as a babyface. Like, it's just real solid worker, you know, just somebody who, as soon as Lady Tapa seemed like she wasn't going to be able to do it, I sort of put the call out. And Latasha is somebody that I had sort of contacted before, who had contacted me, and it just, everything seemed to work out really, really well. I watched some matches that she was in. She's one of these gals that sort of gets around Shine and that kind of thing, and boy, she's a powerhouse, and she can move around that ring. So I'm really interested to see if her and Rachel can have a kind of chemistry in that tag match. Dementia, Larry, is this fair to say that, you know, especially since Rachel has been wrestling in other states as much or more than she does in Georgia, is Dementia the number one girl in Georgia right now? I mean, just looking at her work that she's done in AWE, PCW, it seems like almost everybody has Dementia on their card right now. Would you say that she's sort of taken over that spot as the girl in Georgia?
Yeah, as far as active wrestlers, you know, the more active, like, you know, Amber O'Neill and Tracy Taylor are Georgia people, but they're not that active in the state. If setting them aside, Dementia definitely right now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. I heard when she wrestled Ashton Starr that she crushed him with four of those. Oh God, she calls them the amnesia, where she just runs and just smashes her ass into the head. Apparently, she did it to him four times.
Oh man,
just crushed him flat and destroyed him. So I mean, right now she is on a roll. So that's definitely going to be a big match.
Hey, we got a caller here.
Okay.
Area code 256. Who do we have here?
Very good, but don't pretend like you don't know who I am.
Oh, it's Matt Hankins.
Matt Hankins.
I'm just here.
I thought it might be Jimmy Oxendine or something. You know,
dear
Larry
Goodman
sure.
is calling me in to go to work. Ridiculous. No,
so
you're listening, seeing what's what, you know, hyping up Luscious Latasha, which is you can't do enough of. She came to PCW like an absolute storm, and you know, the people there haven't seen Miss Rachel in a little while, so they are going to be frothing at the mouth to see that combination on Saturday.
Yeah, it looks to be a really great card. I'm looking forward to being there. Matt, if I could ask you this. So lots going on with you. PCW is, you know, back running their two shows a month in Porterdale. What else is going on Saturday? And I don't know if you've been listening, but we've been talking about UIW. You have some experience in that West Georgia area. What do you think the solution is? Let's go to that first. What do you think the solution is in West Georgia? You have all these promotions turning up, and it's hurting. I mean, I don't know how much it's hurting, but it's definitely not helping Peach State, and certainly not helping UIW. Is there something that needs to be done or can be done as far as West Georgia goes?
It's a waiting game, man. And it always is out there, because it seems like every year around this time and every year around tax refund time, everybody and their brother becomes a promoter in West Georgia. I hate it for C-State. I hate it for UIW, because those are the promotions that have withstood the test and hung around long enough for that to be known as their territory. But they just got to hang around. I think in Larry's view, he said UIW is only running once more. This year, I think that's probably a good thing. If you can't win the fight, don't force it. Because UIW has proven that if they open the doors, they'll get probably 100. Yeah, they're probably going to be 100 people no matter what area they are in there. If it's going to cost money to try to fight in the melee that's out there right now, lay out, let them miss it a little bit, and let them go see some of these other shows and realize, oh yeah, there's a reason these shows aren't here all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Oof. Well, Matt Hankins, one last question, and this actually is a question for you and Rachel. So with this tag match that's happening on Saturday, what's the rest of the card look like? Like, who's some of the faces? Because we're probably going to get people there who maybe haven't seen PCW in a while. What's stuff that they can look out for?
They can look out for the Lights Out match. I mean, the women's match we had been building around, and, you know, that thing kind of changed and got even bigger than it was before. But underneath that, something that's been brewing for months now is Bill the Butcher and President Marco. They have decimated our referees to the point that I don't feel safe having an official in the match with them. And I also don't feel like it's good for the rest of the show to have those two constantly at war with each other, but they'll fight anywhere. They'll fight anytime. It does not matter. So we're just going to turn the lights out. It's not going to be a sanctioned match. We're going to turn the lights back on. There'll be no official, and whoever walks away from that will be the better man.
Oof. Well, it looks like it'll be a great card on Saturday. Larry, I had a question for you. My question is this. So WWE famously has sort of bottomed out. This can actually go out to everybody. It sort of bottomed out ratings-wise. Now they're sort of crawling back. it feels like they're almost hanging on until they get to quote-unquote WrestleMania season. You know, they kept using that phrase, and this might sound like an ignorant question, but Larry, I'm going to throw it to you first. What is WrestleMania season mean? When does it start? Is there an official start time for it? Like, what would you say WrestleMania season is?
I don't know. I always think of it as like it starts after the first of the year and really kicks in the last, what, February and March. That's what I would consider WrestleMania season.
Yeah. Hankins, what do you think? What's WrestleMania season?
I think it's WrestleMania season in the build to the Royal Rumble. That's where it begins.
Mm. Yeah, that would be about the first of the year, yeah.
Yeah, first of the year. This has been the doldrums for the last – this is essentially their off season. They don't try anything fancy. They don't try anything new. They try to set up what's going to happen. Now, with the ratings as they are, with John Cena being away, this could be a time where they deviate from the norm, and Roman Reigns is as hot as he's going to get, it seems. They might pull the trigger. I doubt it, but traditionally it's going to be that build to the Royal Rumble and then on after. You know, it doesn't start till they hang that sign for everybody to point at.
Yeah. Rachel, here's a question for you. So last night on Raw, they had a four-way match with the women to determine the number one contender to take on Charlotte for the Divas title. And it was Brie Bella. It was Sasha Banks, who was wrestling her first real thing on Raw. It was Paige, and it was, holy crap, how can I not remember the fourth? But when push came to shove, oh, last kicker, her.
Yeah,
when it came down to it, Paige won. But something I noticed about the match is, you know, they've been saying, Divas Revolution. And I think it's a case of they just keep saying it, but they don't show it. And last night, they let those four go at it. And I'm here to tell you, I mean, you might think it's a popcorn match or it's just a cluster or whatever. The crowd got into that match throughout the course of that match. And by the end, they were really into it. And I mean, and I got a new respect for Brie Bella, of all people. I went, you know what? She's over. She's hanging with these girls. It looks great. And, you know, I thought Paige winning was actually the right choice. And so she's going to take on Charlotte at Survivor Series. Here's my question, Rachel. Now that you're here in Florida, and no doubt you're going to check out NXT shows and Shine and things like that, what's your rough take on what's it going to take to get women's wrestling over in the long run on Raw and SmackDown, like it is obviously in NXT? What's it going to take for the women thing to really catch on instead of them just telling us that it's supposed to catch on?
You know, I think kind of when it all started, the Divas Revolution stuff, you were saying like, oh, these women, like, the work rate is so much better, but it didn't ever translate over to Raw. That was kind of their money. They got to take care of those girls because they've got to, like, they're the real money makers in it. And now those girls have all moved up. So I think that has a lot to do with kind of that being a really great match, where maybe it was possibly kind of a holding pattern to see how things went in NXT before they pushed it up, or to kind of get the hype going, and then once the hype kind of hits the top, that they really then delivered. I think that that's kind of, as far as what they're doing, kind of on the radar, what it seemed. And it's just going to be a continuation of, you know, a lot of the people that watch NXT are the people that are watching the Ring of Honor and all those. So they've already got that fan base, but that's where you're starting to get it in the, you know, the public eye, and it will, I think, really build. I know you say that things don't build from the indie shows and everything, but I think that there is a build there as well, because, you know, we like to think that, you know, oh, I saw wrestling and little Johnny loves wrestling, and I went to the Kroger and, oh, look, there's a poster for wrestling. So I do think that will eventually translate, and at the level with, like, Stu and Leva and Mia at Shine, and, you know, hopefully very soon with me there as well. But I think that it will kind of start there, and it will just keep building. And it's just going to become something that's undeniable until it is one of those, you know, when you look back, those are also the matches. It's not just the Undertaker matches or the John Cena matches, that you're going to start to see the women's matches becoming a highlight when people talk about the pay-per-views or the WrestleManias.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely happened at NXT, and that I certainly would love a thing where the women's matches, it wasn't seen as a novelty. I think that's the thing. In NXT, it's gone beyond just being a novelty. And at Raw, it's still like the Divas division. And it's perceived as lesser in some way, shape, or form. My thing is, get rid of that fucking belt. I just can't take it seriously with that gem in the holograms fucking belt. I can't. I mean, it's such a minor sticking point, but I just can't do it. Until they got to get rid of that thing, and I think doing what Rachel said.
I think it's this is what a 12-year-old would want to wear. And so it is partly a merchandising thing, but it does take away from overall.
Yeah, that's probably true. Larry, if we don't have anything scheduled, because, I mean, any number of callers was going to call in, and it is what it is, but I have devised a game of sorts, if you and Matt Hankins and Rachel are willing to play one of my ridiculous games.
Well, I'd love to play a ridiculous game after hearing the two ridiculous games while the weeks I was away. You know, I mean, with this, the show turned into a zoo for those 2 weeks, but it was pretty entertaining. But we...
Rachel was not here for those either, so she does not have to take the hit for those.
Yes, definitely the inmates running the asylum. But we do have our guest is on the line.
Oh, no. Yes, could you please introduce him, Larry?
If my little studio thing here will work, he's there if I can get him in. Here we go, I think. Yes. We're now joined. We're going to move up to Tennessee. We're now joined by manager, promoter, booker, Tennessee State Fair employee, Paul Adams.
I made it all the way to Tennessee State Fair employee with keeping a straight face. I'm sorry. I couldn't go any further than that. How are you guys?
How are you doing tonight?
I'm okay. Wow. So what's up?
Well, you know, when you were on the show the last time, we didn't really we talked more about recent things, about your time up in Knoxville with David Marquez and so forth. I wanted to ask you a little bit about, could we talk a little bit about Saw tonight, Showtime All-Star Wrestling?
Yeah, for sure.
And maybe this ties into what's going on now. You have a show that's going to be coming up in the coming months here. Is that correct?
I've got a little show that we're doing north of Nashville. It's right up by the Kentucky border. It's a little town called Portland. It's in Tennessee. And it's actually just a fundraiser. It's for a group up there called Hype Mentoring. Leah from Grumpy's Bell Bonds has come on board, so she's going to allow us to give away, sort of do the gimmick where all the kids that come, kids 10 and under, get a free Christmas gift, and hopefully we'll raise some funds for this group. They're trying to build an actual location up there, sort of like a Boys and Girls Club type deal. So, you know, coming on, I did a show at the State Fair this year. Actually, we did 10 nights of free wrestling on the Midway, and then we did a show in the sports arena at the fairgrounds the last night. And, of course, rolling in all that big wrestling money coming off of that windfall from that event, I figured I'd just let it roll and head on here in December and do another one. I'm still rolling, and I can't get the stink of that wrestling money off me. So on to the next one.
For those who aren't familiar, could you explain a little about who Leah Hewlin is and how the heck did she get involved in pro wrestling and so forth?
So Leah was our title sponsor when we did, like when you were mentioning Saw, Showtime All-Star Wrestling here in Nashville. We aired for a couple of years on the CW affiliate here, and just we had wound up with getting a deal on CW. And our main goal was to go out and get sponsors to really capitalize on that TV time. And that was going to really be our focus on how we made money. It wasn't going to be trying to sell tickets to live events. And I think Reno just, you know, if you live here, you pass her billboards all the time. And if you see one, you don't forget them. You know, she sells a lot of sexuality with, I mean, that's the whole gimmick, a lot of pink, a lot of, you know, exaggerated upper torso shots. The logo for her company is a caricature of herself, and that's essentially what she sells. So it kind of seemed like it would be a good fit for wrestling. And we went and just pitched it to her, and I pitched her the idea of doing a weekly segment on the show where we could actually try to find people that she was looking for that had jumped Bond. So that, you know, in a year, if she found even one of these people, that would pay for her, you know, annual sponsorship, the money she would save on these guys jumping Bond. And to me, I mean, I always look at those magazines on the counter that have mug shots, or if it's, you know, if it's a famous mug shot on TMZ or something. And there's a certain entertainment quality value to that anyway. So it sounded like a good match, and she thought it was, and it was. So she was our main sponsor, and a huge, I'd say, really a big part of the personality of the show, actually, too. So that's sort of Leah in a nutshell.
Yeah, I mean, I remember reading when Larry Goodman would write reports of the show. I mean, I was thoroughly entertained by hearing about the latest commercial, or, like, basically cutting promos about how you're going to get this guy, and, like, saying all the bad stuff that he did and how we got to get him off the street. And I just thought, like, that's like the dream sponsorship of wrestling.
Yeah.
Where it's so great.
Yeah, you could really run wild with it. And we did. I mean, it was, you know, when we cut to the, we called it the Grumpy's Tale of the Tape, and it was the basic statistics and rundown on the guy, and it was a picture, but, you know, you graphically and everything swipes, we did it just like, you know, what it sounds like. You're watching a boxing show, and here comes the Tale of the Tape. And we had a guy that was the most wanted, Grumpy's Most Wanted of the Week, that's what the segment was called, that it was the Saturday after Thanksgiving. One year, this guy that was on the Most Wanted was watching TV at his apartment with his friends, and he came on the Most Wanted. His friends held him down and called the 800 number and got the reward.
Well, so I mean, it certainly paid off for her. Plus,
yeah.
I mean, if we're being honest, there's a better than even chance that at some point one of the wrestlers would have been a client.
At one point, we had an attorney that was a sponsor, and we had a bail bond. So we could have opened a whole territory here, and I think they're fine.
It was one of the greatest wrestling sponsors ever. You had this, like, former Miss Tennessee with, I mean, these huge tits, and would always, you know, display them on television every week, and you know, with the catchphrase "You ring, we spring." I mean, it was just awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And we would go. We would do like updates on the people that we had caught. You know, the most wanted that they had caught. And so, I was kind of on call for a while, and I would just keep a camera. And if they were going to catch somebody, I'd go somewhere. And I remember we were having a show at Buffalo Billiards, which was a bar in downtown Nashville, one day. When we were doing a bar show at night, and I got a call during the day to run over to the Waffle House and catch them with this. And the woman that they had been after was like, I think her name was like Billy Joe something. And the whole gimmick was that, like, even though you're looking at this picture and she looks like a man, it is a woman. Like, that was the whole pitch on the Most Wanted thing. Like, yes, this is actually a woman. And so I go and I catch this. We film them bringing this woman in shackles. I mean, like waist shackles, ankle shackles, at the Waffle House. And I just at one point thought, like, I'm sitting on the grassy knoll at, you know, the 66 gas station, filming them capturing this lesbian at the Waffle House. Then I've got to go run downtown and make sure the ring is up at Buffalo Billiards Bar. My mom would just be so proud of everything I'm accomplishing here today, thanks to the wrestling business.
Fighting crime.
Yes.
Paul, while we got you on, I have to change gears for a second. We've always teased that we're going to have a Burt Prentice story. Can you please hit us with a Burt Prentice story?
I think when I was on with you guys last time, we had talked about me getting heat with the security guard, which wound up being like the mom took a swing at me, and I said, hey, you know, can you go after that crazy bitch? And that's my mama. Well, my most recent experience with the staff at USA Championship Wrestling, I was going to be in on a finish, and you've probably seen it. It was one of these, though. I stole it from something I saw in the 80s. But it was we were going to milk down towards the time limit, and then the baby face would have a visual pin on the heel, and 1-2, and then the manager kind of rings the bell, and everyone's, what the fuck happened? And then you kind of go from there. So I was going to make my way down and grab the ring and the bell and ring the bell and the 2 count and then a big schmoz and whatever. Well, I head out there. People that work there aren't. I mean, like, I don't, we've got 2 incidents now, so I mean, I guess it's pretty obvious, but he hasn't really smartened them up. So I find myself in a struggle for the ring bell to try and pull off this finish with this girl. I head back. She winds up with a chair and reinforcements from the crowd. I don't know whether family members or what. So I wound up back in the locker room sitting there going, give me a chair. I got to fight off this bitch with the bell. And everyone's just sort of looking at me like I'm fucking around, you know? And so finally, you know, I'm sure I'm looking at them like, what are all you fucking idiots looking at, you know? Give me a fucking chair. So I grab a chair. I head back out there. And we do this thing. We miss the spot. And I come back in, and like a chair slams against the door. And they're like, what the hell's going on out there? I said, I told you I'm fighting that bitch for the bell. And they said, well, fuck, I thought you were just joking, you know? And I said, no, I was literally fighting that bitch for the fucking bell. So we missed the whole finish, and now I got heat with the fucking bell guy and the bell girl and the security at Burt shows. So that's where we're at. Now, I don't know if it's a Burt Prentice story, but it sort of is and it sort of isn't.
Situation that I wanted to ask you about, and this was towards the end of the line when Saw was kind of like the end of your tenure, kind of like running on fumes, I think, in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
But you had a TV taping, and there was a situation that took place with Chris Michaels and Chase Stevens.
Yes.
Can you talk about that? What took place that night?
Okay, well, I'll preface this by saying that a couple of different times during the Saw thing, we decided we would film some things backstage. The 2 times that we brought cameras out and mic'd people, I don't think we would have disappointed with our footage, because there was a bar brawl one night down in Columbia that we got on footage. It involved 2 girls that were actually with us, were the ones that started the thing to begin with. And it wound up with, you know, some very big, tough wrestlers running off into the woods until the police, you know, were gone. And, we, you know, it was just the usual ridiculous fucking scene when everybody gets together. The other night that we actually had cameras was the night you're talking about with Chase and Chris Michaels. And there had been about a month, maybe 6 weeks leading up to this show where they weren't getting along. And I'm going to speculate. It's wild speculation. This might have had to do with a girl in some way, shape, or form. There might have been a female involved in what was going on here.
Wrestlers fighting over a girl, I don't believe it.
I didn't say fighting over. I'm just saying there might have been a member of the female persuasion somehow factored into this whole equation. And so for about, you know, like a babysitter for 6 weeks, I'm calling them both, going, you know, are you guys all right? Because they were in sort of a program at that point. And actually, we came off of this taping at the fairgrounds, and I think it was like we had done a match with Chris Michaels and Lordell, and Chase was somehow involved. And it was the biggest, I think it was because we switched nights. They switched it to a Sunday night on CW. But it was the biggest rating we'd ever done. So, you know, I was kind of like, let all this interfere with business, basically. And so for about, you know, like I say, a month or so, I was calling them both, and like, you guys going to be all right? Do we all need to go have dinner someplace? Do we all need to go talk this out ahead of time? I don't want to get to the show and have this shit fucked up. You know, whatever. Now, of course, I'm trying to, like, save myself a hassle through the whole thing, but I was trying to save, you know, what I thought was going pretty well on camera. So we got to this thing, and I think Chris was there first, and I talked to him, and I said, well, have you guys talked it out? No. And I'm like, well, fuck, you know, I thought this was going to get taken care of ahead of time. I didn't want you both to come here tonight, and I'm having to fucking deal with this. All right, well, whatever. So then Chase got there next, and he comes up, and I go, so you haven't talked to Chris or nothing? No. So, yeah, well, he was here a second ago or whatever. I said, all right, well, hold on. Now, in my mind, I had, like, they were going to be in the opening segment shot in front of the house, which was going to be an interview thing where they wound up setting up for a match later tonight. So they were going to have to coexist right from the get-go and figure this thing out. It was only like maybe an hour before the bell time. And so now I'm standing there with Chase, and Chris comes walking up, and he's got his hand extended like a gentleman to shake hands. And, you know, Chase just shook his head no. And, you know, and I'm like, oh, fuck, you know, here we go. And so Chris is like, you know, are you serious? You know, and Chase is like, oh, I'm not fucking shaking your hand, whatever. And so this goes on from that, and then, bam, Chase fucking drops it one shot. And this is, like, if you've ever been out with him, and there's a million people that probably listen that know, that's his move. He fucking one shot, it's like a shotgun goes off, he'll drop somebody, and they're down, and they're out, and that's it. It's one shot, and it's over. That's an easy way to win a fight when the fucking guy's out in one shot, and you just walk away, and he can't do anything. I have figured out that that is a brilliant strategy in fight, thanks to observing Chase. So he knocked him out, and he walks away, and I'm standing there, and the fucking camera's right there filming the whole thing, and I'm like, well, what the fuck? So now I'm looking around, and Kurt Herron, who's one of our referees, and he referees like amateur wrestling and stuff too, so I sort of figure he probably has like a little bit of first aid background. So I'm grabbing him, and I'm going, hey, Kurt, come here, help Chris up, and he's on the fucking ground, he's out. And Kurt's like, you know, Kurt's like typical, like, doop de doop de doo. Well, what happened? You know, and I'm like, he fucking slipped. And he's, oh, he's looking at, well, I don't see any, there's nothing left on the floor. Geez, what did he slip on? I'm like, he just fucking did. So I leave him, and I find Chase down the hall, and I'm like, what the fuck? You knocked the guy out? He's like, yeah. And I go, well, what the fuck, man? You guys are in the main event? And he's like, I'll work him. And I'm like, how the fuck are you going to work him? He's knocked the fuck out. And he's like, I don't know, he's probably working him now. Get him in the ring. I'll get him through a fucking 15-minute match. I'm like, he can't fucking stand. So I go back down the hallway. They're getting him off. And he fucking looks at me. They get him out in the car. And they've got him out in the car all night. And I don't know what, you know, what we're going to do. I go out to him. I'm like, you know, I don't really want to ask you to work him tonight. But, like, what the fuck? He says he's good. I had to try it. I'm like, what are you, can you even fucking work? And he's like, I'd prefer not to work him. I'm like, yeah, I fucking guess so, you know. I'm like, all right, you want to work Bordell? And him and Bordell wound up having a tremendous match. But now Chris came back in maybe 10 minutes before, you know, that needed to go to the ring. And he's getting his gear on. They're going through 100,000 spots. And so Chris's music is playing, and I'm fucking neurotic about music playing forever without, you know, with nobody going through that curtain. It's just one of those nitpicky things. So anyway, so the music's fucking playing, and I'm getting pissed. I've had enough that fucking night anyway. But I go back in there to find Chris, like, let's fucking go, and they're going through a bunch of spots and everything. So I hold the door open for him, and he comes to walk out of this one dressing room, and now there is some wet shit on the fucking floor right there, and he fucking steps in it, takes this huge fucking bump, lands at my feet, and is knocked out cold again. And his fucking music is playing in the background for his entrance. And he slowly does, like, the Undertaker rise, you know. And he looks at me, and I get him up, and he looks at me square in the eye, and he goes, you and your goddamn unsafe work environment. And he walked to the ring, and he had a fucking classic with Wardell Walker. And it's all on tape.
You had to change the days until someone got punched in the face sign and the this many days until an accident sign. Oh, it's a rough night.
Yeah.
It's a rough night.
Well, we have a caller on the line, not too surprisingly, because he let the surprise out of the bag.
Yeah.
We're joined now by your good buddy and former Saw employee, David Young.
Well, I had to let it out of the bag because nobody was going to be listening to this shit. If I hadn't came on here, nobody gives a damn about Paul. Oh, my God.
I think your introduction was half correct. Former SAW employee. I don't know that you need to throw Buddy in there.
Oh. I listened to a couple of these stories, and I caught a little bit of truth in some of them. And then, like, the Grumpy's bail bonding thing, that's the most safe person in the world around Paul. If he was any deeper in the closet, he'd be a moth. Oh, no. Hello?
Yeah.
Chris, well, I didn't know if we were waiting for the crickets to finish up. Or...
Well, I was actually waiting on the story about Chris to end because you said you had it all on tape. And if there's one thing I know about Paul Adams and Saul is nothing ever made it on tape. Nothing ever. And when it did make it on tape, it never made it on TV. You would not believe some of the stupid shit that I did to that company. That never once saw the light of day on that TV show. This band made me walk through downtown Nashville on a Friday night on 2nd Avenue wearing a sailor suit with him, just walking through the crowd. And we filmed this, and it never saw the light of day. I don't even know if he saw the finished product. I mean, it just never saw the light of day. I told him, I said, well, thanks for making me unfuckable in Nashville, Paul. We were able to at least get that out of the way.
We walked down Broadway in Nashville at about, and I remember it was like this time of year because it was daylight, whatever, the clocks went forward or whatever.
Yeah, it was dark.
Yeah, and so we got a late start in our sailor suit, and we were walking down Broadway at like 3 o'clock in the morning in our sailor suits, and Dave's whole midriff, we'll call it, was showing because the top was too short and the pants were like high waters and too tight.
And the hat was too small for my head. Let's not forget
that. Yeah, he looked like a schoolboy on the way to Easter Sunday Mass or something. It was still a schoolboy sailor outfit. And we got down to the end of the street, and these girls were like, ooh, sailors, sailors. And one of their boyfriends looked up the street and saw the two of us and goes, those aren't real sailors. Those are gay sailors. I can only assume they were looking at Dave.
Yeah, that's exactly what they were looking at.
That's what did it.
We actually, I don't know if you guys know Snoopy, but he's a friend of ours that owned a bar. He worked at a bar in Nashville, and he let us film some stuff in his bar after they closed down because Paul wanted to make it where we made a mistake and went to a gay bar. You know, Paul in a gay bar is unheard of. So we go there and we film this sequence with Snoop, and he's our waiter. And Paul's like, wow, we must have got here early. There's nobody here yet. And I said, yeah, it's still a little early. It's still early. And he comes and brings us these drinks and sets them down in front of us. He goes, they're on the house. We love sailors around here. In fact, we love seamen. And Paul takes a drink of his and goes, salty. Not bad. I thought I was going to die. It was the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life. Still, never saw the light of day. Not one second of it ever saw the light of day on TV.
Yeah, you don't know what I'm compiling all this footage for.
Yeah. Oh, I do. I do. It's for when I run for mayor or something like that so it could all come out on TMZ.
Yeah, because it'll just be me that's keeping you from winning that position.
Yes. That'd be the only thing that makes sure I don't win a seat as a mayor. And thank God for that Grumpy's bail bonding thing, because it made leeway for so many things to happen downtown. I remember some nights we would be downtown and Paul would just say, oh, fuck it, but Grumpy's will get us out. Just do some of the most outlandish, stupid shit ever.
Yeah, we were discussing how at one point we had the attorney and we had a bail bondsman on board. We could have ran a territory.
Oh, yeah, easily.
And we did. Easy. I mean, we definitely utilized those services. I don't want to get into it, but I didn't. But
there was a couple of guys that actually had to use Grumpy's, I know.
Yep.
Well,
now, David, this is Dave. Go
ahead,
Larry.
Go ahead, Steve.
Well, you know, David, this Steve Platinum, we never really get a chance to talk. It's sort of like our paths almost cross a million times. I have to ask you this question. It's completely off topic right now, but you worked for Diane Hughes for any number of years, sort of gave credibility to her promotions and that kind of thing. I got to know, because I mean, I hear stories and this, that, and the other. What is your impression? As a guy who always kind of shoots straight and says what's on your mind, what do you think about Diane Hughes when all is said and done?
Diane was a sweet lady. I mean, she really was. She kept me in a job for a lot longer than I probably should have been there and paid me very well. But that was a weird situation, man. I mean, that was so weird because she made Quentin Kevin, I don't even know his last name anymore. She made him the booker, and it turned out those two were sleeping together. And that was just the weirdest situation.
Wait, what?
Yes.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. So glad I asked you. Oh, my God. All right.
Yeah, I mean, and, like, Kevin really thought that he had some power down there. Like, he would, like, get up in wrestlers' faces and, like, scream to the top of his lungs. And one night, John Bogey, he, like, poked Bogey in the chest, and John Bogey bitch slapped him straight to the floor. It was the greatest thing I'd ever heard of in my life, and I just kind of wished I'd have done it first. And he was gone after that. We never saw Quentin again after that. But yeah, Diane was really good to me. I mean, we would have a falling out. I would get fired. 2 weeks later, I would be back and probably making more money than I was the first time I came back. That show was great, though. My time in Columbus was probably some of my favorite times in the business.
Wow. Wow.
Oh, man.
Well, thank you for answering that, yeah.
Yeah,
no,
Columbus,
that run was Jerry,
not the Phoenix City part. I really hated Phoenix City, but the time we were in Columbus was outstanding. I mean, the crew that we had was unbeatable, to be honest with you.
Yeah, there was a point there during that Columbus run when, I mean, you guys had the best show around. I mean, certainly the best show in Georgia. That, those were some great shows over there.
Easily. Honestly, I think one of the best matches I ever had and one of the best build-ups was me and Eric Watts for the heavyweight title. And the night that he actually beat me for the belt was it outdrew Dusty Rhodes and Tully Blanchard in a cage.
Wow.
So that was amazing. And just the way that we did things down there. And it was always a super big fight. I mean, I like Jerry Oates. I really do. I like him a lot. But he's so old school that he refuses to be new. Like, you had to fight to get him to do anything. Like, he would send out Greg Brown as a manager, and he told us that Greg was not allowed to say anything to the crowd or do anything. He had to get a chair and set it beside the ring and just sit there and watch our match and then go to the back. That was it. Greg never did anything else but that. And I used to fight it every week. I was like, why the hell is he there? Fuck, you got to. He's playing the role of a fan. But it was a fight, but Eric Watts was a great politician. He always knew how to make Jerry do things. And that build-up for that whole sequence there was just amazing.
Oh, that's cool. Well, you know, David, I got one more question for you. You had a career, part of your career. You and Rick Michaels did your thing. When you look at Rick Michaels now, I mean, he books Peach State, he books NWA Atlanta, he's booking that show in Barnesville, WrestleAmerica. Like, it seems like he's kind of come full circle. And like you, he obviously loves the wrestling business and is steeped in it. When you look at Rick Michaels now, like, did you ever think that at this point in your life, like, did you ever think Rick would be where he was? Was there any indication of that when you guys were doing your thing and dominating tag wrestling and all this other stuff? Did you ever have indication that Rick would be here where he is now? And
I always thought Rick was a better promoter than he was a wrestler. I mean, don't get me wrong.
Oh, really? Wow.
Rick was a great, yeah, wild side. I mean, a lot of the wild side stuff, Rick was involved in that in the early days, especially the NCW stuff. I mean, Rick was the brain power behind all of that stuff. Now, I'm not going to say that we got along. I mean, the whole time we were World Tag Team Champions, we hated each other. I mean, we fought constantly. We did one trip together, fight, and we drove to Dallas, Texas one night, and we drove separate.
We just lost Dave.
Oh, Rick's got power now. You can't tell a bad story about Rick Michaels without shit going bad.
Dave is gone.
Supernatural.
So, Paul, while we have you on the line, we're gonna wrap up soon anyway. But, Paul, I want to ask you about something about David Young. Now, like, it, clearly you guys have a rapport and a history together and that kind of thing. Wrestling has obviously changed in the last few years. I'm not sure exactly how it is in Tennessee, but I mean, I see the Georgia scene, I see the Florida scene. Stuff has changed so much, even since 2001, when I sort of came to the area. What's that?
I got cut off.
Sorry.
That's all right.
We're trying to have a conversation here, sir. Go back to the children's table. The adults are trying to talk here, sir.
Oh, no. David, I certainly want to hear the end of that story, but I was just about to ask Paul, and David, since you're back online, you might as well chime in as well. Wrestling has changed so much, I think. What is something, though, that continues to remain from you know, say, early 2000s, late 99, even the 80s, or, you know, my personal favorite is the late 70s and early 80s stuff. What's something that remains and endures and lets you know that wrestling's going to be okay? What's something that continues to happen in wrestling that changes so much?
Well, yeah, I think you can always count on a new crop of guys getting over. Now, whether it's like an organic thing, which seemed more of what happened with, say, The Rock in that time period, Austin, or whether it's, you know, whether they're going to set out to make a new guy like they did when they started the Cena push, or like they're seemingly going to try to do with Roman Reigns. They've got such a machine to utilize that they're going to get a new crop of talent over. I heard you guys talking a little bit about the ratings earlier, you know, and it's just a down cycle, and we've probably seen two or three of those in the last 20 or 30 years. And I just think that now that, like, the WWE thing, the marketing machine is just so plugged in, that it's just going to be, that's what you're going to see forever with that. And I think that's a whole other beast from what you would look at as traditional wrestling. Now, you may look at NXT. You may look at NXT as being more those guys coming out and being like, they're basically going to show TNA what they could have been if they had been happy being a C or a number three level brand. You know, if they were a little bit more satisfied in their plays being a family dollar than trying to be Walmart, they could be hitting these little towns and these little markets with some of it's the same crew. I mean, you're going to wind up James Storm, Samoa Joe, maybe AJ. So they wound up doing it better than those guys were able to have a sight on what to focus on. They just never got it together.
I think that's the key to this business, is finding out who that diamond in the rough is. I mean, you've always got to have that one guy with the star power. I mean, so many people hate John Cena, and you hear John Cena sucks at all the shows, yet at the end of the night, John Cena always has the highest selling merchandise of anybody at the show. And, you know, people must love to hate John Cena. I mean, my grandson, he thinks John Cena is the greatest thing ever. And I think that's the one thing that's going to keep this business going. Everybody wants their heroes. They always want to have a hero, and they always want to have an underdog that they can, like, go out there and cheer for. And that's the one constant in this business. I mean, if you look back in time, I mean, remember the Rock and Roll Express in, like, 86? I think Ricky Morton could have ran for president and won in 86. He was so over. It was amazing. I mean, I think the business needs more guys like that.
People are the constant, too. I mean, like Dave was talking about there, wanting to have a hero and then wanting to boo a villain. I mean, you can go out the same way you could 30 years ago and have a manager and a heel and pass the chain and get that over, just because, you know, people's psychology, it's the same human instincts that's always there. There's certain just human nature to hate certain things and like certain things.
and you guys may disagree, but I honestly feel that this business was made by poor people. I mean, it was made for poor people, you know, people that don't have a lot to do entertainment-wise, and this is an affordable way for them to be entertained. I mean, it's a poor person's version of going to the theater, seeing a play.
Right.
I mean, and that's a concept.
That's a really good way,
business.
Yes. That's a really good way. That definitely. And it appeals to just very simplistic good versus bad.
Yes. That's why simple storylines always work.
Paul, can't thank you enough. And David, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you guys for coming on. Last week, Larry and I, we droned on and on and on. We went almost an hour and a half. But I think that that's a great place to stop. I certainly appreciate you guys coming on. Is there anything you want to talk about as far as things that you guys got coming up in the near future?
I'm trying to do as little as possible with that man right there. I think we're going to try and do some. We've been trying to get a stand-up act together for the last 2 years. I got moved over into this shit hotel here. The rooms are so small, even the roaches are hunchback. And Dave moved out once he got me over here to this fucking shack.
Well, he dropped the property values.
And now I'm living in squander, still waiting for the first open mic night for me and this individual right here. So I don't know what. I've got a show on December 11th.
We can't decide if we
want
to do it in Nashville or Chattanooga.
I've got demand all over the Southeast is so strong. It's a main event in the arena. I don't know what he's got planned. I don't know what he's got planned. I've got a show December 11th in Portland, Superstarfield MD, Ricky Morton. And sometime in the next 5-10 years, we'll have a stand-up show somewhere, I'm sure, between Chattanooga and Nashville.
I think if you can squeeze back into those sailor outfits, if you guys could get down to Midtown Atlanta, you'd probably sell the place out. It'd be all good. No, you'd not want for a date. It'd be amazing. So,
I would definitely do the sailor suit again. That's probably the least of the stupid things that we've done.
Well, thank you again, guys. I hope you'll come on at another time. Well, for David Young, Paul Adams, for the venerable Larry Goodman, who's not going to come to PCW, fuck that guy, man, and for the lovely Miss Rachel returning this week, I'm Stephen Platinum. Thank you guys for joining us on The Tipping Point.
And that's all, folks.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com for the latest information on upcoming events and more. As always, we thank you for your continued support.